Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What's up, D3 Nation? It is Wednesday, February 20th, and with me as always is my boy, my buddy, my big dog. How we doing?
Dan, doing well, man. Just came back from the Swarm Das Beer Hall event fundraiser, fundraising my salary. Much fun, you know, got after it a little bit, had some pretzels, had some beer, good time, so.
Wonderful. So hopefully the takes will be flowing here for you. How was your weekend? What'd you get to watch?
Yeah, great weekend, man. You know, hung in there. There were some good games. You had Salisbury, Gettysburg. That was a lot of fun. I mixed in with Swarm practice in between that. And then, boom, we finished off the nightcap with some CNU Stevenson, which was a lot of fun. Loved that game. So, great weekend for D3.
Yes, it was a great weekend for D3. And that is a great segue into something else that I have been dying to talk to you about. NCAA Championship Weekend. Would you like to hear about it?
Dan, please tell me all about it. I'm pumped for this.
Well, I am excited to announce that this year, the Inside Lacrosse podcasts are brought to you in part by the NCAA. And so with that, the men's and women's NCAA Championship Weekend are heading back to Gillette Stadium, held jointly for the first time since 2017. From May 3rd to May 26th, there's nowhere else in the lacrosse world to be other than Foxborough, Massachusetts for 8 of the best and most impactful games of the season. The action starts Friday with the men's Division I semifinals, continues on Saturday with the men's Division I semis, then championship action starts Sunday with men's Division II, men's Division III, and women's Division I, culminating Monday afternoon with the men's Division I final. And you and I, as always, will be there in person, doing our thing, catching D3 Nation in person. What do you think about that?
I'm stoked for it, Dan. Can't wait to get a hot dog with you down there in the concourse.
No doubt. And fortunately for us, we're going to save $5, and all of our fans can as well, because this year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off all single-day ticket options for men and women using the code ILPOD at checkout. So head to ncaa.com/laxtickets and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. You know you're going to Championship Weekend already, so why not save yourself $5 and help us show the NCAA how awesome all of our D3 listeners are by purchasing your ticket today. Once again, that's ncaa.com, lax tickets, and ILPOD at checkout for $5 off your tickets.
Boom. Loved it, Dan. Great shout out to the NCAA. Great partners here with us, and can't wait for that championship weekend. It's going to be so lit.
And getting to that stage obviously takes a ton of action. We still have a while to go to that, so you're going to hopefully hear that ad read a ton more times between now and then. But let's get into some of the action that unfolded this weekend, in part as we head towards championship weekend, knowing that that is ultimately the end goal.
Yep, that sounds great. Let's get into it. So I think we start here by shooting out some scores here, some big ones from the weekend, from the past week. It's been a few weeks since we've all been together, so we'll recap some big ones over the past few weeks, and then we'll kind of go in from there for the top 20 and all. So I'll do some quick hitters here real quick. Let's start with Stevens 13 over Springfield with 7. That was a great one this past week, as well as what I alluded to earlier. We had Salisbury 12, Gettysburg 11. Can't wait to dive into that one some more. That was a big one there. RIT 17 with Grove City 11. Grove City, they've been a fun team. Can't wait to talk about them a little bit more. They've been a lot of fun to watch. St. Mary's making a little noise a little bit, coming up over Randolph-Macon 11-10. Great game there. Then you had Endicott 14 over Nazareth 12. Good game, followed by St. John Fisher 12, Ithaca 11. So pretty tight there. Rounded out here with a couple more. We have Babson 11 over Union 9. That was a top 20 matchup that flipped some top 20 things that we're going to talk about here soon. One that I watched pretty closely, CNU 13 over Stevenson at home 10. Big one there for the captains on the road. Showed some dominance. Can't wait to talk about that one. Last two here, we have Dickinson 7, Scranton 2. kind of a unique game that we're going to get into a little bit with some of the uniqueness of it here and there. So don't want to allude to it too much. And then finally, to round it all out, we have York 6 over FNM 5, which was a nice tight one for the Spartans there. Dan, it was an awesome,
Can I stop you for a second real quick? Let's say you're a new listener, right? Maybe your son is a freshman and you're like, whoa, Inside the Cross is a D3 podcast? What the heck is that? We didn't really dive into like who we are or our background at all. So if you're, now you're thinking to yourself, why did York FNM get thrown into the mix? We are York alums, and part of the reason that we do this is so that we get to talk about the Spartans. So
yes,
that said, this game is not one that I'm rushing to talk about, but I did feel like this was a decent time to just quickly address that fact.
That's fair enough. We will always figure out a way to talk about the Spartans in some way, shape, or form every time we hop on here.
Yeah, apologies for the interruption, and please proceed.
Yep. No, so you're doing
a great job here, by the way. Just a quick boost of your confidence there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm feeling good tonight. So, that was pretty much my full list. I mean, the games were pretty awesome this week. I thought great stuff. If you're a D3 Lax fan, I personally think we go into the review a little bit and we'll talk some top 20. Maybe we'll talk some shifts here and there, and we can just kind of go down the list and maybe highlight some of those games that we just talked about. How's that sound to you?
Perfect. Let's continue to let you take this host role. I have some good notes here prepared, so I should be able to hopefully answer any questions that you come up with.
Love it. All right. So I'll jump right in and we'll start with the top 20. Number one, Tufts. So the NESCAC, they do not start play until I believe it's this weekend. So no movement really from them. You've seen Tufts in the top spot the past 2 weeks. That hasn't changed. So we got to wait to see them play before we really can gauge them there. Next up, we got Salisbury staying at the number two spot. This is a little controversial. I've seen some people drop them down to three. Staying two for us. They've had the big win over Grove City and Gettysburg now, two very formidable teams. So let's talk about that Gettysburg win a little bit.
You're such a hater. I can't hold it. Sorry. I tried to hold it in.
I'm not the hater.
You are such a hater. You were ready to move Salisbury down in the polls after they beat a top 11 team. Last time we were talking about like, oh, Gettysburg's pretty good. Beat the bag out of Lynchburg. We thought Lynchburg's pretty good. Gettysburg took it to them, you know, this, that, and the other. Next thing you know, Salisbury beats them, and you're like, beat them by one. Like, I don't think anything of it.
No, Dan, so I had some time to flesh that take out, and I think I found a good way to articulate it. And they've done this, what have we done this? We've talked about this plenty of times. We've done this podcast 3 years now. They do this every single year. They start off, you can call it slow or whatever, they don't lose, but they start off a little bit slow. They're like, oh, is this year's Salisbury the same as last year's Salisbury or the years prior? And they just slowly and meticulously work their way through the schedule, getting better and better and better. Because at the end of the day, these games don't really matter as much as what comes in April and May. And they know that. They're just here to get better and continually improve on what they have on their current roster. And they're doing that right now. We're watching them. So if you think that this is a down year for Salisbury, or if you're like, oh, they aren't the beast that they quite always are, think again. They do this to us time and time again, and it's going to happen again this year. We're going to be talking about them for the NCAA championship. You know, they're going to be there. They're going to be there. So I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Gosh, I feel like this is a different you. I called you the premier hater within 2 minutes, and now you're like, you know, loving up on them.
It's not loving up. It's just it's what it is. You know, they've done it time and time again, and I'm not going to get duped this year. I won't do it.
Okay, all right. I actually digested this game pretty well, so I'll dive into some of the things that I thought were pretty interesting. First of which, like you mentioned, the tinkering and what comes with them, and you know, they're changing and so on and so forth. This game they started Michael Leahy, who we talked about. I don't know if it's Leahy or Leahy. They started him at attack this year in this game, a freshman out of St. John's that was coming through the midfield. So they started him down at attack. And then Ryan Della, a big, strong right-handed shooter out of Broadneck High School, public school in Maryland, is now running on the first line midfield. And so it was just, you know, some of those like tinkering and exactly what you said, like you know, you're going to see them start to make adjustments. And I don't know if it was a long injury that led to this or whatever it was, but regardless, we were going to start to see some changes and so on and so forth after an equal performance against Grove City that you happened to be there for in person. And so, you know, after that, you knew that we were going to start to see some things change and see some things be different and so on and so forth. Yeah, I think we'll continue to see some things change, but, you know, it'd be hard to be pretty predictive of what those would be at this point.
Yeah, so question for you, Dan. In the Grove City game, I saw Salisbury, they weren't really patient with a lot of their takes. They were shooting pretty early in the shot clock, getting after it early, and they kind of felt rushed. And I think that led to how close the game was. Do you think they were a little more patient in this Gettysburg game, or did you see them still kind of rushing on offense a little bit?
Yeah, no, I think scoring 12 goals against Gettysburg is hard, and they did that, right? I think Gettysburg's defense is pretty good. Gettysburg goalie got him 15 on the day. Before the game, I would have said Salisbury wins, but I would have said Salisbury wins because they're going to own the faceoff X, and I don't know what Gettysburg's going to get in cage. And like I said, Gettysburg, you know, they got 15 saves out of Murphy Huey and really competed at the X in a way and mitigated Melamphy in a way that I didn't see happening after the way that things went at Lynchburg. So that was really interesting to me. And then, yeah, I'd say that, you know, like I said, I think I don't look at this game and see a one goal win. I see they scored 12 goals against a pretty good Gettysburg defense. And yeah, it took, you know, having to get pretty deep in possessions and, you know, really work for some good ones. And there's one possession that I'll specifically remember, and I'll try and go back and grab the clip, but it's an offensive possession, like down to the right side of the field. And Bromwell gets it like over on the far wing, takes top side, sweeps, skips it down to Horace on the pipe, who like fills the space perfectly behind a two slide that gets dragged slightly out of place by a good cut inside. And then as the ball goes to Horace on the pipe, he catches it and in and out of his stick right to the crease, as if it was like a EMO set or something. And they knew that like as the ball went to the pipe, we're going to cut behind it and we were going to get something good in there. But it wasn't EMO, right? It was just a regular 6-on-6 set, but the timing was perfect. And it was such a great feed from Horace right to, I think Strub is who finishes off. And Bromwell is the one who like, you know, gets it all started by taking topside and, you know, getting the attention of the defense. And it's a good cut inside that opens that feed up down to the pipe. And it's a really, really, you know, I think if I were to be able to pull that clip up right now and show it to you, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I don't know that I saw that against Grove City.
Yeah, yeah. The hockey assists, I've always been rooting for them to be a stat in lacrosse. You know, that I think they're well worth it. And heck, you know, with what I saw from that Gettysburg game, I'm surprised it actually wasn't 7-on-6 with Salisbury being man down with Gettysburg with too many men on the field. They did that quite a bit in that game, which led to some costly turnovers their way.
Well, I don't know how often they did it, but they did it in a really poor time, you know, really tough situation. And so late in the game, Gettysburg does the work they need to clear the ball, get a stop, calls timeout, and it's about like a minute 30 on the clock or so, and they come out of that timeout with 7 guys and turn it over, and it's like such a backbreaker. You know, the ball goes down. Salisbury ends up in a pinch, so they call timeout. Now Gettysburg sets up a double, and they get the ball back and clear it again, call timeout again, and then they score, and there's only 6 seconds left in the game. But it's like, oh, well, like, if you had just scored out of a timeout on the first timeout, like, you might have had enough time on the backside of it to, like, make something happen. But that is just a total backbreaker, you know?
Yep. Yep. Definitely one that broke it there.
And I feel like Gettysburg like does a good job in this matchup a lot, right? Like they beat him in 2023. This year they go up 5-3, and you kind of start to feel shades of that. And then Salisbury ends up with, you know, some momentum and goes on a run. And then like Salisbury just does what Salisbury does best, and that's like figure out and like manufacture these wins and just figure out how to get out of it, because, you know, that's what they do. And the guy at the helm has figured out a way to do that quite a few times.
He's the Bill Belichick of D3 lacrosse. He just will not.
Of lacrosse, period.
Of lacrosse in general. He will not be beaten. He knows exactly.
On the Mount Rushmore, no doubt.
Yes, 100%.
All right, I think that's enough of this one. But yep. Definitely was one of those like premier early D3 games that is super exciting. And at one point they like trade goals. There's a goal off of both faceoffs, like faceoff goal, faceoff guy goes forward and Salisbury ends up with a fast break goal. And then very, very next faceoff, Gettysburg scores like 10 seconds later or whatever it is. So Yeah, just some exciting swings, ton of momentum, some exciting plays, and great matchup.
Yep, loved it. We'll move down the top 20 here, keep on going into number 3. We have RIT coming in. They've had some big wins against Denison and Grove City as well. Grove City, they're going to be in our list here quite a bit that we're talking about. But Denison and Grove City, two big wins here. Dan, what have you seen from the Tigers here early on that have been made them a mainstay here at 3?
Yeah, I mean, RIT is one of the teams that I feel like every year we talk about, and it's like they have this ability to score in droves, and all it takes is one run, and then the course of the game is completely changed. And in this situation, like, you had a 6-5 game that the next thing you knew it was 13-5, and RIT just goes on this run that is like, by the time you come up for air, the game is over. You know, it's just tough when you're on the other side to scrap together enough plays to kind of, you know, do what you need to do to stop the bleeding. And in this situation, like I said, it's like by the time they came out of that run or whatever, the game had just been, you know, blown out of proportion. And I think the reason that that happens, and once again, RIT is really strong, and you could name a handful of different guys that are impacts in that spot, but they're just incredible in the middle of the field. And so it's like face-off win or a calls turnover or whatever it is. Something happens in the middle of the field that creates a goal. And then next thing you know, it's like face-off win. Then they get a 6-on-6 goal. And then finally you maybe get a possession and it's like another transition goal. And now it's like next thing you know, you've given up 3 goals in 3 different ways in 3 minutes. And just like that, the game got away from you.
Yeah. Yep, they have the ability to do that. We've seen it in person before, and they are looking like they're going that way again this season. We'll keep on moving down, though. We have UNL down at 4, which they had the big York win. It was, I believe it was 12-10 in that game. But that was a pretty tight one that the Generals ended up pulling out.
Yeah, so that one was 2 weeks ago. But yeah, definitely a tightly contested game. If we're talking about it from the WNL perspective, maybe a little closer than you would have hoped. But you know that you were going to get a good battle out of the Spartans just because of the history of that battle there. We mentioned before that York went into that one in the Child's Era 7-1. They exit that one 7-2, much to Adam Lamberti's. What's the opposite of dismay?
Of his the word slipping my mind.
Happiness.
Yeah.
I still have to do my one left.
I was just gonna ask if have you paid up?
So don't let me forget. Maybe we'll put a deadline for by the end of the day tomorrow.
Yeah, I will tweet it tomorrow night.
End of the day tomorrow. So end of the day Wednesday, the day that it's released. We'll get that done.
Perfect. All right.
That's really all I got for the Generals. They didn't play again since then. I don't believe you can double check me on that, but I think York is the most recent game they've played. Great one for them to get under the belt. And then I think York, like, they lost. So, like, no moral victories or whatever.
But
it was closer than I think a lot of people would have expected. They competed in spots that I thought that they were going to get their butt kicked, like at the face-off X. Defensively, they were pretty locked in. Offensively, the ball was moving around. They certainly looked a lot better in that game than they did this weekend against F&M.
Yeah, that one was actually going on while I was making Valentine's Day dinner, so I had one eye on the phone, one eye on the steak. Right. Yeah, so
we ordered in, so I got to watch.
Yes, good. But yeah, from what I saw, York was really scrapping out, making a good game, and then you couple that with a gritty win over F&M, you know, 6-5 tight one. I think York's really set themselves up well, kind of moving forward here with some good momentum.
You're shades of what you used to be. You used to come in here, and every time someone would say the word F&M, you'd be like, "Oh my gosh." Now York squeaks by them by one goal, and you're like, "Oh well, F&M is tough. Beating them by one is gritty."
I'd like to know the tights count in that game. That's all I'd want to know. What team was wearing more tights than I could?
All I know is Ken Stockman is on the tights count, so that's
good. Yeah, good.
But yeah, that game was ugly offensive output, but both teams defensively, you know, again, were pretty locked in. Both goalies were pretty good, made some good saves, and, you know, anchored the defenses pretty well. But that game was pretty ugly from an offensive output standpoint.
Yeah. My man Nash Momak has been playing pretty well this season. So Props to him. Looking forward to if he can continue this run here this season.
All right, let's keep moving here.
Yep, so we'll continue down our list. Number five, Wesleyan, another NESCAC team. Haven't played, so not too much. But, yep, we still got them at number five. Now, number six, CNU. They have a big win over Stevenson, is the kind of claim to fame right now. Started off a little bit slow. I would say they've had some games early where they've been a little bit tighter than the captains maybe would have expected. But as results-wise, they've come out on top in all the games that they've needed to. Especially in this one. Dan, I watched a lot of the CNU-Stevenson game. I thought it was a lot of fun. Stevenson had a great game plan of coming out and jumping on those midfield dodges that CNU is so good at. They were jumping those, doubling them early, and making them make decisions, which was leading to some turnovers, some additional Stevenson possessions that they capitalized on. I believe his name is Tyler Merchant in goal for Stevenson, but he had a great game. Was making a lot of big saves. Really impressed with him. I'm looking forward to watching him in the Mustang Classic games. CNU kind of did get their way towards the end and pull ahead with some big runs there.
So what to you do you feel like was, you know, like the ultimate difference in the game if you had to pick one thing?
One thing. I mean, honestly, I think CNU had the talent. They looked talented. They looked like they had a deeper amount of guys that could do what they needed to do. And honestly, they looked better stick skills. Like they had slicker sticks. They were banging the ball around a lot quicker. It looked a little bit cleaner. It was just when Stevenson was putting that pressure on them that they weren't really prepared for it. But anytime it was an even up 6-on-6 sort of thing, CNU kind of had their way. In the second half. Now, the first half, different story. Stevenson held him at bay. I don't believe CNU scored a 6-on-6 goal until the second quarter. So props to the Stevenson defense. They were doing some good stuff. But once CNU was able to figure it out a little bit and get going, they kind of had their way there. I think that's a good recap on the CNU there. We'll keep this list going. RPI, they've been handling some teams that they should be. Beat Geneseo by 10 most recently. Joe Perry, only a 58% save percentage, so I am watching that a little bit. Best goalie in the nation, high hopes for him, so hold him to a high standard. I'll be watching that intently. We'll keep going down the list, and Bowdoin, number 8, another NESCAC, so not too much info there, as well as Middlebury, number 9. Those two are staying put. But 10, Stevens, we got them jumping up the polls here a little bit. Dan, they had that whomping over Dickinson. I would call it a whomping personally. But what have you seen from Stevens?
So I watched a bit of that game, and kind of what I was saying earlier about RIT, where like they go on these runs, and by the time you come up for air, the game is over. That's a little bit of what happened here in Stevens. And part of what happened, though, in this one was just total face-off dominance. Dickinson only wins 3 face-offs to Stevens 16 face-off wins. So it's just like a make-it-take-it situation. And that leads to like an 8-goal run or so, 7-goal run. And then, like I said, by the time that 7-goal run happens, it's just a dominant second quarter. And then by the time you hit halftime, like you're coming out and it's just a totally different game at that point.
Yep. I see that. That kind of is a trend. I especially see it in the D1 game too. You get these teams that can just go on runs and just kind of put you away. We see it with the top teens and Tufts and RIT. It's honestly a really good strategy that I'm surprised hasn't been adapted too much more.
Well, teams, I promise you, teams are trying to do it.
I know they're trying.
It's harder said than done.
But I think you'd make it an emphasis, like, all right, we can get 2 here, boom, we get 2, make that 4, and then you just bludgeon teams at that point. But no, I get your point there, and I think that's some good stuff. Stevens as well with a win over Springfield, so they're sitting pretty good at number 10. We'll move down here to number 11, Gettysburg. We talked about the Salisbury loss, very close game, but Gettysburg also with a pretty dominant win over Lynchburg. Dan, I know you caught a good little bit of that one. What led to that, the Bullets sort of domination, if you want to call it that?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the wetter lacrosse games that I can recall seeing. Okay. Like, it was just total downpour. I don't remember exact total of the combined teams' turnovers, but I remember it was like almost 50, like between 45 and 50. So a ton of turnovers in the game, really sloppy. At some point, I remember looking at the stats. I guess it was halftime. I remember looking at the stats, and Lynchburg had 12 face-offs won and 11 shots. So that's not great offensive output on that side of the ball. And I think they're just learning, you know, what to do post some of these dynamic midfielders that could run by guys and Dylan Wolf and Riley Mitchell, that, you know, those guys could create something like on a snap, right? Now they're just kind of adjusting to the post world without them, and they still have some talent at attack and some other talented players coming through the box at the midfield, but just have to figure out, you know, the best way to get those guys going on that end of the ball. And then Gettysburg scores a ton in transition, or gets at least a couple in transition, and, you know, scores off some end lines and scores off some quick stuff, and just scores in a bunch of different ways that, you know, Lynchburg defensively is going to have to learn from pretty quickly. And offensively for Gettysburg, like, I think we're pretty slick. They're pretty slick on that side of the ball. And right, that also got to 11 against a very talented Salisbury defense as well. So I think Gettysburg's pretty good on that side of the ball. And then when they're able to apply the pressure that they want to and slide the way that they want to, like, they're a defense that's pretty good as cover defenders. And so they can get away with not sliding a lot. But when they do go, a lot of times it's going to disrupt or going to the back of the head or going in a double that, like, you know, that the defender, when they're going, that defender is going to be able to go and get deep in gloves and really flush the ball out of their stick or flush a dodger out towards the sideline or midfield line. Like, they're going to have to stretch and extend and, you know, really run away. Right. It's going to be pretty disruptive. And so Gettysburg kind of had their way with that in terms of, like, settled 6-on-6 sets. And then in the ride, they were pretty aggressive as well and put the ball around a bunch.
Yep, makes sense there. I think that's a good spot for them at 11 right now. We'll keep on going down with, we got St. Lawrence down at 12. They had a tight win over Western New England, but pulled it out there. And then we have Dickinson at 13. Just talked about them with the loss to Stevens. But the Scranton win 7-2, it didn't sound like they were, it didn't look like they were full strength too much there either. I think Owen Porter was out on that, trying to find their way a little bit, but had an amazing performance by the Scranton goalie, who's slipping my mind right now, so I apologize.
Declan Allen.
Declan. Absolutely dominated with 19 saves, and Dickinson gets their only 3 saves in the fourth quarter, so some interesting.
That was a very weird box score to look at. But, you know, when we're going back and doing our review here and, like, looking through some of the box scores and stuff like that, it's like, oh man, Scranton held Dickinson to 7. That's crazy. They still lost by 5. That's crazy. And then you look at the stats, it's like, oh, they had 33 turnovers. That's nuts. But they had 19 saves. Like, it's just a roller coaster of ups and downs. I think Scranton's pretty good defensively. I think they need some work offensively, but have some pieces there and some smart guys behind the table moving some strings. So the thing about this, I think, that's more alarming is you picked Dickinson to be a Final Four team.
You had to remind me. You had to throw it out there. I sure did. I had high hopes for
the Red Devils. Right? Is that going to be your – they're injured?
They're figuring things out. If they can do this without Owen Porter, imagine them with Owen Porter, dude. Let me tell you.
Got it. Yeah, it was a ton of new guys playing attack for him and filling in. I don't know, you know, Thurston, again, I'm not 100% sure, you know, what his usage is or what he's allowed to do or what he's supposed to be doing, if he's injured or what. But he was playing some midfield as well, so. Just interesting to see how that all plays out as the season goes along there for Dickinson. They have Roanoke coming to town this weekend, and I think Roanoke is hungry to beat them. They haven't done it in a while, similar to Stevens, where I think Dickinson has played them in some tight games recently. Now this feels like the year that Roanoke's going to be able to get to sink their teeth in and get some revenge.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that being a fun one there with the Red Devils. So we'll keep going here. We got Swarthmore at 14. They had a big win over Messiah, followed by St. John Fisher at 15. They're squeaking by some teams. They had a 1-goal win over Ithaca recently. So they're up at 15, but be on the lookout for them.
And they beat Haverford by just a goal or two as well.
Haverford as well, yeah. Yep.
So they're also I don't know how much I blame, I don't know how much you get to fault them or whatever, or judge them, because they're playing these weird site indoor games that there's
Yeah, they've had two indoor games now where it's looked like it's looks like the championship the
film
series
is coming from like
on your mom's tripod.
It does
from
not look like the championship series. The championship series looks beautiful.
Well, you know, the production quality was great. The field looks almost the same. It's just filmed on your mom's 2007 tripod where you had, she had the Sony. The
All video indoor camera. Turf is champ series.
Yeah. anything indoor turf, champ series immediately.
I'm sketched. The Cardinals are sketching me out.
They're sketching
again,
me out?
Say it with me. Teams pretty much don't ever really move in the polls after wins.
Yep. You can't move a team for winning weird indoor site games, you know?
Maybe you can. I don't know.
You can't.
Maybe those are bad rules.
You can, but you can't. Yeah. I want to see them outside on their home turf.
But if you are a Cardinal fan, maybe you're locating the panic button.
Are you at least figuring out where it is in the drawer? Not pulling it out. Just yeah. It's in my left drawer, third down from the
You've
right.
You've at least thought about it.
Okay.
You've been like, is it expired? Is it out of date? Do I need to update its batteries? Like,
yeah, you might need to replace the batteries. It. It's probably a weird battery, too. You got to order on Amazon.
No, double A's.
Double A's?
It's convenient.
Okay. All right. We keep going here to Amherst at 16. They have not played again. A lot of NESCAC teams in here. So interesting to see if we'll get some movement once they start play. But they're going to sit at number 16. Next up, we've had some movement with this one. Babson 17 with a comeback win over Union. Dan, I know you you caught a little bit of this one. What have you seen from the Babson Beavers?
Yeah, this was another one that I got to watch pretty significantly. Babson is interesting, man. I feel like people sleep on them sometimes. But they've been pretty good, and they've definitely been pretty good on this side of things with the COVID fifth-year transfer era. Great business school, right? So that makes them a really attractive spot for some of these fifth and sixth years. One of those guys that I'll talk about right off the bat is a guy that I didn't even know was in D3 this season until after the first D3 preseason All-American list came out, and people were like, I think you might have forgot about this cat. And I was like, yes, you're right. I did not. Well, no, you're wrong. I didn't forget about him. I didn't know that he was at Babson. So my bad, but glad he is. And he wasted no time making his presence felt. He had 4 calls turnovers, 7 ground balls, and a point. And that was Tripp Clark, fantastic defender, first team All-American defender from last year at St. Lawrence that's now at Babson. They also got some pretty strong goalie play. Alex Vasilla made 15. He's kind of the anti-big dog. He's a righty, but that's about all you guys have in common with your style and play. Pretty quick, aggressive. Makes a good one early in the game, like I'm coming off the pipe, and you can just kind of tell, like, maybe those early saves when you get them like that, like, make a really good one early. It kind of helps you settle in, right? So yeah. He ends up with 15 on the day. And then here's a good fact about the game, and this was 17th meeting between the teams dating back to 2009, and this was the first one that the Beavers of Babson took home.
Ooh, all right, shout out Beavers building up that dam, log by log.
I like it.
The log to build a dam.
I like it. All right, you wanted me to keep talking about Babson, what I like? I got a couple other things.
Tell me what you like about them.
Defensively, I think they're pretty good on that side of the ball, right? I mentioned Tripp Clark earlier. And then they have just some guys that like are disruptive, right? Bruno Batty, I believe he's the coach's son. He's definitely a disruptive player, lefty that kind of, you know, has a presence and makes it felt pretty strongly. And then they have a short stick D-mid that stands out to me like right away watching. Just fantastic feet. Really, really good feet. He's 6'6", short stick D-mid. Yep,
ooh.
Tall. Yeah, Riley Shaw is his name. He's from Peachtree, Georgia. So 6'6", 195 pounds. Great feet, though. Really, really just, like, matches feet with anybody. And so I think he's the guy that, you know, is kind of an ISO, like, don't even really worry about sliding. I wouldn't call him super disruptive, right? Like, he's not Matt Witchers throwing seatbelts, chucking dudes to the ground. But where you go, he goes, and he's a shadow, and just really, really good footwork and great speed, and was really impressed with his game as well.
Oh, love that. That's sounds like an absolute weapon there.
Yeah, good. Great feet. Gotta love the feet.
Yep, Great feat. Good for the Beavers. Good for the dam. We'll keep
also,
on.
Also, like, on the other side of the ball, again, I have a another pretty good tidbit here, and this was straight from the recap, but Topher Bauer, he also will play a little bit of short stick D-mid, at least from time to time. He'll get play on that side of the ball, but he's now has points in 34 straight games. So, been around for a while, graduate student, he's been there, done that, has, you know, a ton of points in his career under his belt at this point, and is just a really good player, really good Division III lacrosse player.
Love that. Good shout out there. Good stuff for the Beavers. We'll keep this moving along. We'll go to the Hornets, who are number 18 on our list. We talked about them a little bit, so we don't have to hash them out too much, but they've had the win over Pfeiffer. So anything else of note before we keep moving on?
I mean, you love Coach Kudelka, and I do too.
I do.
That's another fact of, you know, if you are new to this podcast, not only are we York alums, but I also spent a year and a half at Lynchburg playing for Coach Kudelka. So a ton of respect for him and the program and, you know, a ton of the guys that I went there with, I still am in contact with and so on and so forth. But I think there's a panic button there as well. I think the offense side of the ball just, again, maybe not a panic button, but like a work in progress, right? Specifically on the offensive side of the ball. And defensively, they're going to be okay. They'll learn from it. I think they have some pieces. I think their goalie's pretty good. It's a new guy in Cage that we that is taking the reign from Tyler Hadley, who was one of your favorite players from the last few years. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where Lynchburg ends up this season, but right now I don't know that they were super happy with the product that they have put on the field against Gettysburg.
Yep, agree with you there. We'll move on to Stevenson at number 19. They had the 13-10 loss over CNU. Stevenson this year, they're another fun team, but they you know look like Stevenson. They're going to come out, they're going to attack you head on, be very very ferocious, double team you, do what they can to disrupt you. So I think they're another solid team. Again, like I said, too, I love their goalie, Tyler Merchant. I think he's been playing off the chain this year, and it's going to be really fun to see him in the Mustang Classic in the next couple weeks. So
yeah, and Tyler is taking the reign this year as this will be his first year starting for Stevenson. He did start already a season, though, as he was at Catholic in 2024. So he transferred in here this year to Stevenson. You know, like you said, it has kind of hit the ground running, it seems.
Yep, definitely think that. And then finally, to finish off our top 20, we got Union. They had their loss to Babson, which drops them down to 20, but not too much else from Union there. I know our man Sean is looking forward to turning this ship around and has full faith in the boys. So looking forward to seeing if the Union boys can do that for the rest of the season.
Yep, and they're another team it just keeps, you know, kind of coming up. I think it's an important factor, especially early. But when you're starting new goalies, how much confidence can they get and build pretty quickly, right? And so Union is playing a freshman in Thomas D'Angelo. He made 8 saves in his debut against Babson. And so, you know, we'll just look to see how that continues to play out. And then offensively, they're going to just have to find a few different ways to be able to generate outside of Peter Kipp. Right. And so Union, I think, is a good team. I think that, you know, they're probably a top 20 team. They have a few opportunities here to continue to prove it, but they're probably like right on that bubble. And losing to Babson, I think, you know, like Babson's good and I think continues to rise in these ranks. So in another month from now, we may be looking at that loss to Babson like, you know, not a huge knock. Right.
Yep. Agreed there. All right, so we finished our top 20. So you want to go into some statistical players of the week?
Yeah, it's a great segment. So if you're new, like we said, we do this segment each week, and this is an opportunity for us to talk about some of the teams that we typically don't end up talking about. Most of the time when we talk about game action, rankings, so on and so forth, we're going to be talking about, you know, the top of Division III. And so this will be our best opportunity to kind of shout out some individuals for that. We have a big batch to start. Oh, guys, let's start there. Big dog, why don't you kick one off?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Klaus Rowan. He's out of Hendricks. He was a standout for me. He had a win over Spalding this past week. But my man Klaus, 7 goals, 6 assists for a total of 13 points. You better believe the big dog wished he was on his fantasy team this week with a stat line like that. 13 points is pretty nuts.
Well, yeah, we get to kick back off fantasy. I forgot about that.
I know. What we should do is make an updated graphic with the points and like tweet them out or something like that. Yeah.
Well, no, we can't start yet. Most of both of our teams isn't playing yet.
I know. Most of them are in the net. We can still do like a pre-Nezcat start.
No.
You think I'm dominating you that bad?
Yeah. I have way more Nezcat guys. That makes no sense.
Yeah, so it'll look like a greater comeback for you.
They start. No.
No, the big dog's already up by 100 points.
You have a real problem with manipulating sample size to fit your preconceived notions.
I know what I'm doing, man. This ain't my first rodeo.
Statistical player of the week number 2. Another O guy. Eric Key from Coast Guard. 7 goals, 3 assists, 10 points over Nichols.
Woo.
Shout out Eric Key. Shout out Coast Guard. They're one of the... I love talking about Coast Guard.
They're such a fun team. I had a swarm dad recently.
We have a standing invite to go hang out and see what it's all about. We need to make that happen one year.
Oh, yeah? Dude, I'm in whenever.
You didn't know that?
Great. No.
Yes, you did.
I'm in now? Well, I'm going to finish, round out the O guys here. I'm going to go Austin Sosnovic. Little Eastern European action out of Wilkes. Love the last name. But,
dude. I thought for sure you were going to screw that up.
Dude, I knew that's why you gave it to me, and I still crushed it.
That's why I didn't do it myself.
But Dan, do you know what's better than scoring goals?
What?
Letting your buddy score goals. And that's what my man Austin did this past week. He took 2 himself. He had 2. Don't worry, he can still score. But he had 9 goals outside of that for a total of 11 points. He was just dishing that thing all over the place.
9 assists.
Yeah, 9 assists. Total of 11 points. Dishing that thing out all over the place. Move aside Bryce Bromwell. There's a new assist king in town, and it's my man Austin.
And that was against UPitt Bradford, which I believe this is our first time saying those words ever.
I think so too.
UPitt Bradford lacrosse, because I think this is their first season.
Exciting.
Shout out to UPitt Bradford for making your first podcast appearance unshout out for the fact that it was in this manner.
In a negative light. It's all right. Maybe next time they'll be up front.
Correct. Our next one, and this is a heck of a stat line. We have Christian Reynes from Norwich, who put up 4 calls turnovers, 6 ground balls, 5 points against LaSalle this weekend.
Whoa.
Epic.
That's sweet.
Epic.
Yeah, love that. I think just as good, though, was Nicholas Kuda. You heard of this guy?
How just as good?
Yeah, out of Oberlin. 4 cause turnovers, 6 ground balls, and guess what? 5 points.
Also 5 points.
5 points.
Electric.
Yep.
Electric.
Yep.
2 guys go for the same stat line. Both stat line is ridiculous.
Both stat line's crazy.
All right, a couple other guys here. We also had Andrew Albert in goal for Denison, who it was only a 10-save sample size, but 90% in cage as Denison took down John Carroll 15-1.
Yep, pretty impressive. Even if you only do see 11 shots, just to stop 10 of them, very impressive.
And then another NCAC shout-out, and this was not this weekend, but the weekend before. And it might have been Friday also. But Thomas Nelson had a 100% face-off night earlier in the year for Kenyon on a 16 face-off performance. So 16 attempts, 16 wins, 13 ground balls. If that is something that you think is good, I also would say that that's pretty good.
Yeah, very, very impressive. And Dan, I'm going to take someone we've already talked about a little bit tonight, but Tripp Clark out of Babson. You know, I think he was really impressive.
This segment's not for him. This segment is not for first team All-Americans.
You know what? He deserves it, though. You forgot him in the list.
We can't talk about him. We can't.
You forgot him in the list. I get to include him now. Give him his shine for his 4 cause turnovers, 7 ground balls, and his point in the win over Union.
All right. Our last guy This is a 6 calls turnover, 6 ground ball performance, and this is Kyle Ledger from Wentworth. So shout out to Kyle, 6 calls turnovers, 6 ground balls. So like we said, a hefty batch to kick things off of our statistical players of the week.
Looking forward to doing that again. Yep, good stuff.
All right. Official transition.
Yep, you want to move into some preview before we get to our bet of the week and let some people out of here?
Yes.
All right, let's get to it. So we have a big, we're going to talk about the next 2 weeks coming up because we will not be convening again until after the Mustang Classic. So we'll talk about all the games prior to the Mustang Classic.
We will have a Mustang Classic preview, though.
Yes, we will be dropping some sort
It'll
of
most likely
preview.
Be in either a written or YouTube form rather than podcast form. So stay tuned to social medias to officially figure all of that out. But we will have some sort of in-depth Mustang Classic preview for sure.
Yep, and hoping to do some fun stuff with that Mustang Classic. It's always our favorite day, weekend of the year. Always starts off with a big IHOP breakfast the day of, so be sure you're tuning in and looking forward to all that. It's going to be a good time.
We'll also be in the booth. This is a good time to make that announcement.
Yep.
I don't know that if you've called your shot on a game yet, but I know that I'll be in the booth again for RIT and Tufts. And not exactly sure what else, but 100% sure on that game. And yeah, just going to be, you know, excited to be there on site and definitely excited to get in the booth for, you know, a premier matchup.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you always get the best one, so not to, you know, take that, whatever. But yeah, that's a good one to pick. I'll definitely be in there.
You want it this year? You can have it.
I'll give it to you. You've earned it. You work hard. You work hard for your position. You deserve it.
You can have it.
No, there's some other big dogs playing that I'm going to get
in. Hey, Ricky, I was thinking maybe you could slingshot me in for a win.
But then how would I win?
If you win, how could I win?
We'll figure that out. But
hit us with one of the games that you are most looking forward to in the upcoming slate, though, for this weekend.
Oh, all right. There are some big ones. I mean, you have St. Lawrence playing St. John Fisher this Friday coming up. And obviously the NESCAC starting this weekend, also huge. So a lot of big ones at play. As a York fan, I'm going to give you my York fan, which is obviously going to be York RIT this upcoming weekend. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. York always plays up, so I think that's going to play a factor, and it should be a pretty tight one. But overall, I think best game over the next 2 weeks, I think you're going to have Gettysburg WNL Saturday, March 8th. That's going to be in 2 weeks from now. But Gettysburg WNL, mark your calendars. That one's going to be a bloodbath.
I like it. Two good picks. I think if I had to pick a couple games that, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to, one would be this coming Friday, 2/28. You got St. Lawrence and St. John Fisher. We should have already had a really good second look at St. Lawrence with Cortland, but that game was postponed, so that game got moved. That'll be on March 5th now, so that game fortunately will be made up and should be a pretty good matchup, and I'm excited to see Cortland as well. You know, they're a team that, like, I would, if we extended the rankings to like a 25 or 30, I wouldn't be shocked to see them in that range. So I'm excited to see, you know, that exact product this season. We didn't get that game, so now we're just left with a game that wasn't streamed, but we know St. Lawrence went into double overtime with Western New England. So, like, how good is St. Lawrence this year? I don't know. St. John Fisher squeaks by Haverford, squeaks by Ithaca. Both of those games are inside and, like, weird. Both teams, like, I don't know what we know about, and because we don't have much of a sample size outside of it, like, it's going to take a little bit of time to really figure out what it all means. But it will be a really good game between two highly, you know, competitive programs, highly ranked programs that we haven't really seen a full product of yet, I would say, this season.
Yep, agree. And one other thing that I'm seeing, Dan, on this list, just looking through the next big games, you have Middlebury Amherst this weekend, you have Middlebury RPI next Wednesday, and then you have Middlebury Bowdoin next Saturday, March 8th. Three top 20 matchups for Middlebury. Talk about them a little bit and what we're going to be seeing out of the Panthers this season.
Yeah, they're not wasting any time, huh? What's interesting about them, I think they're pretty loaded on defense, on offense. Think about the last few years, they've been pretty good on that side of the ball as well, but they've been young. And now it's like all those guys come back and they're just more experienced. And I think Billy Curtis is a guy that like we could be looking at in terms of like a NESCAC player of the year type of status if Middlebury goes on a type of run that they could. Russell Thorndike is a guy through the midfield, or at least I think of him as a midfielder because that's where he spent most of his time early in his career. Last year, he played a ton of attack. He can just shoot the heck out of the ball. He can really shoot it, has great range to his game. Patrick Jammin gives him a lefty. He's on Team Kaplan, so you're going to be rooting against him in all of those games, but is another guy that can really rack it up. Henry Tarr defensively is a guy that, you know, Middlebury will get out and they'll play in, they'll put you in a 10-man, and, you know, they'll do some stuff to speed you up, and he's one of the guys that'll definitely speed you up. And then they bring back a returner in net, and they bring back a returner at facing off as well. So just a lot of guys in some key positions that are important and some firepower on offense. So, yeah, I mean, I feel pretty good about where they are in the ranking in terms of, like, for them, it's pretty much still a preseason ranking. But based on the talent they bring back, what they did last year, and, you know, so on and so forth, that goes into those rankings, I feel pretty good about it. The thing is, they're going to be pretty battle-tested pretty quickly. So that should, to your point earlier, serve them well in the long run. But there's no wasting time figuring things out.
Yep, agreed. And then to segue into our bet of the week here a little bit, I know we got a little bit of time. So, Dan, do you want to do two bets of the week? Do you want to do one for this weekend, one for next weekend, or do you just want me to pick my favorite one out of this whole list?
Let's just do one for this weekend, and then we can chime back in for next weekend if we want to.
Oh, okay, well, my favorite one is going to be Saturday, March 8th. Can we do it for that one?
Let's just do two then.
Okay, all right. The two then? Okay, all right. Cheers two. Love it. Let's go first one here. Let's go. This will be fun. Let's go Stevenson-Gettysburg. Stevenson-Gettysburg plays this Saturday, 3-1. You set the line for this one.
What? No.
Yeah. Me? You want me to set the line for both?
Isn't that what we do?
I guess.
Isn't the winner to set the line and then the other person has to guess until they win and then it switches?
Yeah. Did I win the last one too?
What was the last one?
It wasn't the... I won the St. Mary's York one. And then we did one after that, and I forgot. But I don't think we aired it, so technically I'm still 1-0.
Yeah, you're 1.
All right, let's go 1-0. Yeah. I'll set the line then. Stevenson-Gettysburg. I'm going to go Gettysburg 3.5.
It's a good line.
Thank you.
I'll take Stevenson to cover it.
Stevenson to cover 3.5? Fun. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm writing this down.
Yeah.
Yep, Dan, 3.5.
They would have covered that against CNU.
Yeah, yep, you're right. And who do you think's better, CNU or Gettysburg?
CNU.
Take your pick. Yep, there you go. All right, and then next Saturday, March 8th, Dan, I think this is going to be the
Actually, yeah, that's a good question, though. Here's kind of a D3 overarching. You know, I used to do Big Dogs, Big Take. Here's Big Caps, Big Take.
Yeah.
But I feel like in years past, it's been very, like, tiered. Where you've had like RIT Salisbury, Tufts is like a tier, right? Top tier. Those three teams can kind of beat each other and it wouldn't really be a surprise. But if any of those three teams lose to a different team, it's kind of a little bit surprising, right? And so then in that next tier would be like, you know, maybe CNU, St. Lawrence from last year, probably, and just like, some of those other, like, you know, teams that are, again, thinking back to last year specifically, like Dickinson, that, like, were kind of, like, perennially beating teams from, like, 10 to 25, but maybe would lose to any team between 10 and 5, and definitely would lose to any of those, like, three teams that we said before. So then there's this, like, tier system where it's, like, you could lose to any team within your tier, but you're pretty rarely losing to any team that's in that tier below you, much less two tiers away. And then this year, I feel like the tiers are, it's like there's the top tier and then the second guys and some younger guys and playing like more guys that are in that like natural freshman to senior 4-year range rather than like adding on to fifth and sixth years. And, you know, Babson, we talked about them like having the advantage of a lot of those older guys. And I think that that served them well. And I feel like in a lot of the other teams where you don't have as much of that appeal, it's starting to even out a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's a really good point. And definitely something we've been seeing a little bit of, and we might see some more of here soon, especially coming up these next few weekends.
And I feel like we're definitely seeing it in Division One, and I feel like it's just like, Division Three is going to be a year behind, because in Division One they didn't get 2021 back, in Division Three they did. So you're just a year behind with it, and like you're starting to see some of the same type of like parity that you have in Division One right now, where it's like the top 20 rankings are like everybody's putting in a top 20 ranking that is like pretty different, and you could have a ton of different arguments.
Yeah.
And in Division Three, like you're starting to get that way, and I think next year it's going to be even more so, and the year after that will be even more so, and we're just going to see more of that like gap between teams, you know, 5 and 25, to just continue to use that reference of as an example, you know, beating each other in like a continuous ring, and it won't be too shocking.
Yeah, it's a fun year to be in media to rank all these teams and then fight about it online.
Totally.
Yeah.
1000%.
We are in the right line of work here. And then, yeah, so one more that gets me real pumped. We got to do one more for not this upcoming weekend, but next weekend. And I think it's the game of the weekend. You got Wesley and Salisbury, top 5 matchup right there. Finally, I mean, not finally, but a big test for Salisbury. If they come out limp like they have in these past few games, this is going to be a real problem for them. Wesleyan's going to give them all they can handle. We know they have a high-powered offense. They got some good stuff going for them. Dan, what are you thinking about this one?
I think it's such an awesome matchup. Like, it's so unique. I can't recall a time that I've ever seen those two teams go at it besides the championship, right? Can you?
Yeah, I don't remember or recall, especially an early season game, but like a regular season game between these two teams. You don't really see Salisbury playing the NESCAC a ton in the regular season.
I can only ever recall a Salisbury versus NESCAC ever being in a national championship. Wesleyan, that was who they beat when they won theirs in 2018. Definitely a really interesting matchup in terms of like its uniqueness. Factor in the fact that it's the 2018 national championship rematch. Factor in the fact that like Wesleyan, it'll be a pretty early sample for them, right? I don't have their schedule committed to memory. I'm sure they open on the first with a NESCAC, but I don't know who it'll be, so I don't know exactly what, you know, first test is going to be in terms of like preparing them for Salisbury. But at the same time, Salisbury is also not going to have, you know, this massive scout that their coaches who do a really good job in those departments are going to be able to use and kind of deploy. It's going to be a little bit, you know, more blind than perhaps they're used to when they're playing a team in March, right? And so there's just a ton of interesting factors of that one, but that one, I agree, is a really, really fun matchup and one that D3 fans should have circled.
Yeah, definitely. So if I'm going to set a line on this, you got Salisbury at home, early season game for Wesleyan. Salisbury's been battle-tested a little bit. Give me Salisbury 1.5. What do you like there, Dan?
It's at Salisbury.
At Salisbury, yep. And don't quote me. Yep, it's a 3 p.m. game. You know what Salisbury does in that 3 p.m. time slot.
I don't. What?
I don't know either.
We're going to have to lean on someone, one of the Salisbury fanatics that might know, be like, Coach Berkman is 57-0 in 3 p.m.
Yep, completely undefeated.
Salisbury 1.5 over Wesleyan at home. I'll take Salisbury. I'll take the home field. Okay. I'll take the team that's played 5-6 games already by that point. But would I be shocked if Wesleyan goes down there and beats them? I don't think so.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either.
Good game. Good line. Good pick. Yep. That'll be a fun one.
Fun one all around. Love it.
All right, what else you got here for the people?
I think that's about all I have on my list. You want to anything you want to say to the people before we head out here?
No, I feel good. I feel like I got my, I stole your thunder, but I got my big dog, big take.
No, it was good. We just need to have a big dog, big take, but either one of us can do it. It can just be a big take
for
one of us. Yeah.
All right. With all that said, And by all that, I mean all hour and 10 minutes here on Tuesday night. And like we said, we hope you guys enjoy this. We do this all for the D3 fans. We really appreciate everybody who takes the time to listen and tune in. We hope you guys enjoy it. And we hope that it adds to your Division 3 fanhood. If it does, please, please leave a star rating. Please, please leave some sort of review. Send it to a friend. Help us rack up these listens. We really appreciate everybody who sends it to a friend.
Yep, yep. Really appreciate it. Love y'all.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.